So I guess the first thing, I don't know how many security guys. SIEM's kind of a niche market, so I'll go over what SIEM is just very briefly. Then we'll talk about a case study where we used SIEM effectively. Lessons learned, next steps that we're pursuing afterwards, and then we'll open it up for Q&A. So SIEM is just security information and event management. It's essentially a correlation engine. You dump all your logs in, and instead of having to hop from firewalls to servers to your intrusion detection console, you got everything in one spot. So it's just an easy way to have one pane of glass to see everything that's going on across your enterprise. And you can prioritize things. So it just gives you a way to make sense of, 50 or 100 million events a day. We got a team of five, so there's just no way we could look at everything unless we had a way to make sense of it. So we'll just jump into the case study real quick. We had a wake-up call. We'd had the SIEM in place, people watching it for, 3 years or so, thinking we're pretty good, we're catching things. Got a wake-up call. It was literally a phone call from an external org that says, "Hey, you got this worm traffic leaving your network." We thought, okay, that happens a lot. No big deal. They said, no, you have a lot of worm traffic leaving your network for a company of your size. And we said, okay. But our initial reaction was disbelief. How can this be? We rolled out the patches. This particular, I don't know, are you guys familiar with Configure at all? No? So a couple. So Configure basically exploits a Microsoft out-of-band patch. It's the Samba stack, basically. It goes out and scans other machines that haven't had the patch installed and exploits and takes over the box, basically root access or administrator access. So we were in disbelief. We rolled out the patches 2 days after Microsoft put them out. We've got antivirus on top of that. We're watching the network with the SIEM. So we asked this external org, hey, you can't just call us up and drop this on us. Can you give us some kind of evidence? What's going on? They were real cautious, didn't want to send us any data. Kind of pushed them a little bit. They finally sent me a text file that had, they wouldn't give me the destination addresses, like where the traffic was going. It would only give me the source addresses on our side and source ports. Great. That's the firewall address. They've got 10,000 machines added behind it. But I was able to go into SIEM, and with the source ports and the time that I did have timestamps, I started looking at this, and I was like, whoa. That source port actually did leave our firewall at that time. So I started looking at the evidence, and it's like, ouch, okay. So then I started, okay, well, that was that traffic, but what else is that? What else are these machines doing? So we started researching network traffic patterns. Once this thing gets infected, what does it do on the network? And what it was really doing mostly that was we could detect on was scanning on port 445. On its local subnet only. So that was what made it a little tricky because once it got inside, we don't have that level of visibility down in the core of our network. So we got lucky. Our VPN concentrators logged extensively, so we were able to catch a lot of things that way, and then site-to-site traffic. We would get lucky sometimes, certain patterns. Anyway, so we wrote a rule in the SIEM to identify these patterns. Then we took two of us, and we would validate the events, each one, look up the computer name, find out who owned it, and that was sort of in the detection phase. I should have taken detection out of here, but this is a response phase. We started engaging the end users manually. We'd call them up, send them an email, hey, your machine's infected. A lot of them didn't have antivirus installed. It was lab machines. Not that people run slappy machines in the lab, nobody ever. They're always patched and up to date, right? Anyway, so, but in our labs, they're a little sloppy. So after 2 weeks, it was really labor intensive. Volume didn't go down. We were still detecting a lot of events every day of what looked to be infected machines. They seemed valid. We're like, well, what do we do? We're not making any headway. So we used the automation capability in SIEM to shoot an email directly to the end users with instructions on how to clean your machine up, how to install antivirus, how to run a scan, and tell them if that doesn't work, if you do all this and nothing shows up, call us. So We had a few that did that. We found out that antivirus caught a few of the variants of this thing. There was tons of variants of this particular Trojan. So we would gather samples, send them to McAfee, so that the next day McAfee would send us an update. We would be able to catch more. So this was about a three-month push for us. It was what we found out is when they tell you there's an A, B, and a C variant for a particular one, and that's it, it's not really just three variants. There's all these sub-variants. They change things slightly. And it becomes very, very difficult with antivirus. It's a cat and mouse game. It really is. It's what it boiled down to. So for us, detecting and responding to it with the SIM was the best way to go. So what do we look for? We looked for command and control traffic. So once these things get taken over, somebody out on the internet's trying to control them and have them do things. So we would catch that based on people started putting together lists out on the internet of these servers are known to be configure command and control servers. So we'd look for those. That was pretty helpful. We'd look for the unusual volume on port 445. And then we found a few other various indicators during our investigations. So we had three or four rules going at any given time would let us know that this particular machine was infected. And so, results. If you look, this is the first 30 days of our push. So we were getting anywhere between 30 and 50 machines every day that we would. These are unique IPs on our network. About a week into it, I said 2 weeks here, but it's really about a week into it. It's when we started automating. And you can see it's just a severe drop-off. Because at that point, we sort of distributed the response. We had, instead of us having to go every single user individually, we had the machine, we had the SIM, talk to the users, tell them they had a problem, here's the instructions, and they started cleaning their own machines up instead of us having to dispatch a desktop admin out. So it was very, very helpful. And we've done this with other things since then, but this was kind of the first real big return on investment that we got from the SIM. Any questions on that piece of it? Yeah.
Did you consider automatically
disconnecting machines? We did. We just didn't have the infrastructure in place to do it. It gets really tricky when you start turning ports off automatically. Although the false positive rate was pretty low, we probably could have done this on this. We didn't really have the infrastructure in place to do it.
Can you repeat the question? Can you repeat the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. So the question was, did you consider disabling ports automatically instead of just sending emails? And it just gets tricky when you start disabling ports automatically. And like I said, we didn't have the infrastructure. Yeah, the point here was that management gets kind of upset when you start doing that because the phone lines light up. If you start disable it, I'll give you an example. We on a different project, when we were testing this capability, we just had the rule wrong. And we had sales directors that would spend a half a day scanning their machine so that it would come up clean. Sales directors don't like it when you waste a half a day of their time, so they call up the CIO. The CIO's like, what are you doing? And then we finally started to get it right after we notified the CEO, and his machine wasn't infected. So doing stuff automatically is a little bit it's problematic in our environment, at least.
What variant of config do you have?
It's mostly B and C and subvariants of B and C. A little bit of A, but by the time we caught it, most of the variants of A were caught by the antivirus. So, and we saw a little bit of the D variant, but not too much.
And so in your SIM, you were feeding it with VPN logs and firewall logs. Were you correlating on any other data? So what was the rule set you could use to find?
Yeah, I probably should have put that up here, but it's so specific to the application. But The biggest thing, we had about three rules in place. One was looking for that specific, those command and control servers, you know, and they were primarily contacted via HTTP. There were certain DNS domains that were associated with Configure.
Yeah, so it generates, what, 65,000 DNS domain names per day, and then they randomly choose one or two to populate,
right,
if they populate any, and then they rotate those every day.
Yeah.
So were you feeding your SIM off of the Configure working group lists?
We grabbed a few domains that we knew we had seen internally and had specific IDS signatures for that. If you see these domain names, because that's the problem. You never have all the data fed in that you want. So we didn't have DNS query logs in the SIM. The volume's just huge. So we had to kind of pick a few domain names that we had seen a lot of and just write specific IDS signatures for them and then trigger off of that. And then the other thing that we triggered off again was the high volume 445 traffic. Yeah. Anything else? No? So just a few lessons learned, because another thing that we used the SIM for was looking up the Active Directory authentications to see who owned the machine. So if your timestamps aren't synced and you start doing that, you're going to identify the wrong people. So that's the lesson that we pulled out of there, is make sure your timestamps are synced across the enterprise. And when you start doing automatic either notification or taking other actions automatically, make sure you don't have any delay in your feeds. We've had situations where our firewall logs might be 20 minutes behind or delayed just because of some CPU bottleneck or something on the server. And even then, your timestamps are synced, but because of that delay, it throws it off. So that's something to always be cognizant of when you're doing user notifications. Short VPN connections cause problems. And this goes back to the timestamps. We have people who log in for 7 minutes, check their email, log back out. It's really easy to identify the wrong user in such a short time frame. So you have to really be tight in your time. When you're doing this type of push, you saw that curve there. So when the volume drops down, what we tended to do was lower the thresholds. So initially it might be if this machine contacts 50 other machines on port 445 in 2 minutes, then let me know. As your volume drops, you run out of those machines that are doing that type of volume. So you start bringing the threshold down. Say, well, not 50 connections. Maybe it's 20 connections now. But as you do that, you start to run up and bump against normal traffic. So you'll wind up having a higher false positive rate as you bring thresholds down and your volume drops. So that's another thing just to be careful of when you're writing rules. And this is kind of interesting. You'll learn things about your network that they might be interesting, but it's not extremely useful. At the same time we were doing this, as an example, we were looking at spam bots as well, machines spewing out spam. And it's one of those things where we had tried two or three different ways to identify them, but we found out there's a lot of people on our network that have ISPs at home where they pitch mail out of their network, and things like Outlook makes a ton of connections on SMTP for some freaky reason. So I was tracking one guy down. He's connected to this SMTP server in Mexico, and sure enough, I looked him up. His name's Hernandez. He's on AOL. The Spanish version, not all useful from a security perspective, but I know where he gets his mail now, so for whatever that's worth. So then the next steps for us, and again, this is our team primarily does detection and response. So using those lessons learned, we found we needed a better process for feeding what we learned from response back into prevention measures. For example, there may be DNS black holes that we want to put in place for 30 days or 60 days. There may be rules we want to put in the firewall to block that C2 traffic. We didn't have a really good process for doing that internally. It was just sort of like, hey, firewall guy, can you put this in? But no real way to pull it out. And if you know, rules get messy after a while. We found out that we need to build more visibility in our network. There were times where if we'd had packet capture on this particular segment, we could have seen what was happening in 2 minutes or less. It took us 3 days to figure it out because all we had was the end user workstation, and it was some SE who was in Germany on a customer site. So it's having that visibility to be able to look at the packets as they go across the wire is extremely helpful. So that's one thing we're looking to do now. And then if we'd have done more historical lookbacks at things that we didn't get a chance to look at in real time, we may have seen the pattern of this traffic before we got the phone call. Because that's really not the best way to define that you have a malware problem on your network. Phone call is not the best detection method. And that's about all I have.
Let's thank our speaker. Okay.
Yeah, hi, this is Rick Farrow.
Hey, Rick.
I was wondering, you just said that you wanted more visibility into your network, and it just seemed to me that the classic way of discovering you got something bad on your network is if it starts scanning. How aggressively does Configure scan? You said just port 445.
Yeah, it's primarily 445. How aggressively does it scan? That's a good question. We really didn't look at it from that perspective. In any kind of depth, but I think we ended up with our threshold. We still have those rules in place, and we catch machines from time to time, but very rare now. I want to say our threshold is about 20 connections within a minute on port 445. Much below that, you start hitting servers or
Right, normal traffic, because 445 is SMB. So.
Right, yeah, that's right.
So there is a thing you can do for Configure C and later variants, which it forms a peer-to-peer network internally so that only one of the machines actually has to go out and reach the command and control.
Oh, interesting.
So the port scanning algorithm for it to form peer-to-peer networks has actually been reverse engineered. So if you go to the Configure working group, if anybody still has Configure on their network, there are tools that can actually determine by a very bizarre pattern of port scanning at a relatively low level that you have Configure.
Oh, cool. Thanks. I'll look that up. Yeah, we it's very little now, but
Hi.
Hey.
Phil Hollenbach, Yahoo. One question that I struggle with is, what's your success criteria? Like, how do you tell when you're done working on a project like this?
Well, my initial goal, because we were getting somewhere between 30 and 50 events a day, my personal goal after a month was to stay underneath 10. And now I prefer not to have any. But when we got below 10 and stayed below 10 for, 2 or 3 weeks straight, I made it less of a priority. And it was a three-month deal for us to kind of, our whole team was sort of focused, when those things come in, let's jump on them. We still take care of them now, but not with the focus that we had. And for me, it's just all about when the volume drops to a level that you're comfortable with. You're always going to have infected machines on your network, and so when you eventually something else will pop up that you like, we need to turn our focus here now. Whether it's Zeus bot or whatever, everything tends to end in bot now.
Hey, Matt Disney, Oak Ridge National Lab. Thanks for your talk.
Sure.
Has SIM replaced any functionality or any security controls that you had historically been using, or is it just totally a whole new capability for you that introduced the possibility to do things that you just absolutely could not have done before?
I would say it's a combination of those, but primarily it gave us capabilities we didn't have before. I'll give you an example. Right after we put the SIM in production, we started asking the Windows administrators to send us events from the domain controllers. So they load Snare on, and they send us those events via syslog. Inevitably, you forget to have it installed at boot or start up at boot time. So we'd start getting it from the domain controller. They'd reboot it. We'd stop getting events. So one of the things we started looking at with those events was group editions, for example. who gets added to what groups, especially domain admins, enterprise admins. And so anytime they would look at the group and somebody weird was in the group, or the auditors would go in once a month and say, hey, you got three more people in domain admins than you had last month. Who put those people in? Where's the request? The Windows guys were like, don't know. Nobody wanted to. So they would always come to the security team. Hey, can you sprinkle your pixie dust and tell us who did this? Well, the server logs had rolled already because they're in a ring buffer because it fills up disk space. Once we got that into the SIM, we can look back a year now and tell you who put which user in what group and when they did it, when these users were created. So it's really helped us make the auditors happy in ways that we weren't able to do it before. Same thing with account lockouts on the operations side. Users call up all the time to help desk. Hey, my user account keeps getting locked out over and over and over. And the Windows guys just really have no way to look across 30 domain controllers globally and figure out where it's being locked out from, why it's being locked out. We've got a dashboard in the SIM. We can look in, 30 seconds will tell you it's locked out from this machine in the lab, or it's locked out from your desktop that you forgot about because you use this cool new Mac laptop now, whatever. Or it's your iPhone. So it gave us capabilities we didn't have before. Or if we did, it was very limited.
Do I have time for one more question?
Yeah.
Okay, great, thanks. What would you say the most important feature, if I'm out there SIM shopping, trying to decide which vendor to buy, what do you think is the most important product feature or the most couple of important product features that I should focus on?
I would say two things. One, type of events it can parse. So you get, for example, and I'm not going to name vendors too much, but there's one vendor out there that they have a product. If your network is made primarily of their devices only, sweet, go for it. They'll give it to you if you ask them. But if you try to put firewall logs from Checkpoint or Juniper in there, forget about it. So that's probably the first thing, is just flexibility around what type of events can I pull into here. And then the second thing I would just say is ease of use, because when you make it too flexible, it becomes a Swiss Army knife, and some people won't be able to figure out which blade they need to use. So that's one of the things we had trouble with internally, was the one that we use is a very good SIM, but it's so flexible, people get lost in the console a little bit. So that's probably the two things, just ease of use and balance that with flexibility.
About how many events per second do you handle?
Events per second we're getting now, not real extremely high, but in the neighborhood of 1,500 events per second. We may peak up to 3,000 occasionally if something spikes, but that's about it. So between 50 and 100 million events a day. And then we've got aggregation. The nice thing about these things, too, they aggregate. So we tend to aggregate if you see the same event within 30 seconds of each other, just roll them all up into one. Saves you a lot of space in the database, especially UDP port scans. For some reason, we get a lot of UDP port scans. And it's not uncommon to see one line that says UDP flood and then 60,000 events were rolled up into one. They're really helpful for that. Because otherwise, an analyst would have to sit there and scroll through 60,000 lines of UDP floods to see what he's looking for.
Has it helped you do discovery at all, or only work on things that you're either A, aware of, or B, somebody gives you a phone call about?
It's helped with discovery. That's a good question. I'm trying to think of some recent examples. But what I do is I tend to build dashboards, like top 10 dashboards of what are our firewalls doing globally, and then I'll break down firewalls by site, or same thing with intrusion detection sensors. It's basically an advanced IDS. Like we recently found this kind of weird, we're still researching it, but it's some kind of little botnet that it looks to just be ad click fraud, but it uses IRC over HTTP. And we wouldn't have seen that if we didn't have a dashboard up looking at the various signatures that are popping up. So it just gives us the ability to kind of visualize things in a way that you can't do you can't do it without having all the data in one place.